What's up, hockey fans? This is episode 88 of the Clappercast. I'm Burke, and like every other episode, most episodes, I'm joined by my co-host, Sean. Sean, what's going on, man?
Yeah, I'm just celebrating the eventual end of our podcast this week, as we are in two separate fantasy leagues. We're against each other in the semifinals this week, so it could end badly.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what happens, because the scoring system's the same pretty much in each of those. We've got a lot of overlap in players, and
yeah,
we
have more overlap between our rosters on opposite leagues than I do between both of my teams.
Yeah, and I have a lot of overlap on my teams because I like my guys and I like to pick them in every league I'm in. But yeah, there's some real bragging rights on the table here. I think we split, at least in one league, we split the season. And I can't remember who won in the other one because I didn't even pay attention. But
it would have been you.
Oh, okay. So that one's a little less important to me than the other one. but yeah, I mean, we're head-to-head in two matchups. So it's a lot on the line here. We'll see what happens there.
So, in case this is the last episode, this weekend's poorly. Yeah, it was nice being here.
Yeah. Yeah, one of us might be super salty and not on next week, so it'll be a gloating fest on next episode. It'll just be, you know, reasons why this person is so much better than the other person and very knowledgeable about hockey and everything. Although, I will say that I was telling my roommate, who's also in the league, one of the leagues with us, that this morning he was like, I feel like I should just pick up some random players. And I was like, you should pick up Cole Caulfield. And he was like, oh, yeah, he's probably going to be pretty good, but I don't know when he's going to play. I was like, yeah, I don't know, but, you know, he's pretty sick. And and then later in the day, it was like, yeah, he's making his debut today. I was like, see, I told you. It's almost like I know a little bit about what I'm talking about. But
damn good timing there.
Sometimes I get lucky, yeah. But yeah, I mean, the fantasy playoffs are kind of, you know, in progress here, and we're getting close to regular playoffs, real life playoffs. And so there's a few teams that are kind of making the last ditch push here to get in. You know, we've had some teams that are clinched already, and so I thought we could just take some time here and kind of go over who we think is actually going to make it into the first round. And so, do you want to start with the Honda West division, Sean?
Absolutely. We'll start over in the Honda West.
Yeah. Hail corporate. We are not sponsored by Honda. We're not sponsored by anybody. So you know that we're being true there, being honest. So yeah, obviously in the Honda West, we've got, you know, two teams that everyone kind of thought was going to make it, and they've clinched so far, and that's Vegas and Colorado. They're kind of just battling for first. Kind of looks like Vegas is going to hang on to that, but we'll see. And then Minnesota is also clinched. And so that's actually, I mean, we didn't really have them in the top. And I feel like if anyone said that they would have, you know, had Minnesota clinching before St. Louis, that wouldn't have flown, I don't think.
The general consensus was Vegas, Colorado, St. Louis, and then Minnesota, Arizona battling for the fourth spot. But no, we've got Minnesota had a massive push. They've clinched a spot. They're currently 1 point behind Colorado, but Colorado has two games in hand. And they've got a significant gap. It's like 18-point gap over fourth and fifth. So this isn't even like a close thing. This is significant, very clear tier that Minnesota is above the rest of the division.
Yeah, no, they've been playing really good. And I think I was, spouting off their praises earlier in the season about how they're watchable again. And it's true. Like, it holds up. They're still fun to watch because Kaprizov just makes it, he just changes that team's dynamic completely.
It's amazing what one player can do like that when he can just come in and change, like you said, he can just change that dynamic and give, you know, at least one of the lines something fun to watch.
Yeah, and just like every shift he's out there, there's some little play that he does that's pretty cool.
And the energy he brings throughout the lineup as well.
Yeah,
helps change that dynamic.
Yeah, and so right now the last spot is really it's between Arizona and St. Louis. And right now Arizona's sitting in that fourth spot, but they've only got 47 points in 48 games. St. Louis has 46 points in 45 games. So they do have, that those three games in hand, and they're only 1 point back. And so it
Yeah,
looks like they've got a real
and
shot at it.
as well, we're recording this on a April 26th in the afternoon, in the middle of the St. Louis Colorado game that St. Louis is winning 4-1. So there's a very real chance that by the end of tonight, St. Louis could take over that spot if Arizona loses as well in their game later tonight.
Yeah, so they could definitely flip-flop within before this is even out there. But I expect that to be, a bit of a storyline here. I think if Arizona holds on to that spot or, pushes back into that spot, that's not a good look for St. Louis, for them to get beat out of the playoffs by Arizona. I don't think that that'll be well received by fans.
Not at all.
They are expected to be in there. And so, they had some struggles scoring this season. I think if they don't make it, there's going to be some real, questions there. But we'll see. I think if they sneak in, that won't really matter as much, but yeah. Okay, well, we'll move over, I guess, to the Discover Central, which is a very surprising division, I would say. I mean, most notably is that Tampa is not in first, which is
Crazily enough, yeah,
crazy.
they're third.
Yeah, I mean, I don't
I
know if
mean,
they'll
to be
stay
fair,
there.
they're only 2 points behind Carolina in first. It's like Carolina 68, Florida 67, Tampa 66. But still, for them to be that close with Carolina and Tampa is a testament to how, or Carolina and Florida is a testament to how good those two teams have been.
Yeah, they've been really good. And I kind of really I'm really hopeful that Florida and Tampa stay in that 2-3 spot. I don't really care which one goes where, but I really want to see that Florida matchup in playoffs. That would be so awesome to
That
see.
would be, yeah, it could be the start of a decent rivalry as both teams are finally good at the same time. I mean, and Florida is actually decent in general. It's been a while.
I feel like they've kind of alternated who's good and who's bad, right? Because in when they came into the league, Florida made the finals like almost right away, right?
Yeah.
And then Tampa wasn't good until kind of like their cup run, I think.
Right around then, yeah.
And then they kind of got shitty again. Florida got a bit better, and then Tampa's obviously been an absolute wagon lately. But that'd be really—I don't think they've ever had a playoff round against each other, so be fun to see. And Carolina, yeah, shocking that they're first. I mean, everyone kind of thought they were good, but maybe not that good.
Yeah, they've been able to dominate, and the real test for them is going to be the playoffs, because we've seen the last 2 seasons now how they've kind of imploded on themselves and been unable to make a final push through to make a deep playoff or a fully deep playoff run. That they just kind of get to a certain series and they just get overwhelmed and dominated by their opponent.
Yeah, and I think like we were kind of really on Carolina at the big at the, in the off season, I guess, that they didn't go out and get a goalie. And we were disappointed that they didn't do that. And turns out they didn't need to do that because Alex Nedeljkovic is just a beast. And
Yeah,
if
I've been watching him as a prospect for a couple of seasons, and he never really was able to make that next final jump to be a regular NHL starter, and I didn't know if he was going to be able to be the guy that he was projected to be. Going into last offseason, yeah, we were hoping, expecting Carolina to make a bigger push for a goalie because, was Nedeljkovic going to be able to be the guy? He got a shot this year with Mrazek being injured for a lot of it, and he has taken it and run. He has been amazing for them.
yeah, he has been just so good. And you see like some of the saves he makes too, and it's like, he's not making just easy saves. He's making like crazy, like, game on the line saves, like clutch saves when you need him to. And yeah, he's definitely been just a huge addition to their team. And you know, they've got Mrazek, who's a really good goalie. They've got Reimer, who's a, you know, at this point a backup for them, and then Nedeljkovic. And so they've got three guys. When, and you know, Mrazek's kind of has that, you know, I don't know if his bones are made of paper or what, but he's out of the lineup a lot. And so being able to have those three guys and to have Nedeljkovic be able to go up and down without going through waivers has been really good for them. And I think is one of the main reasons that they've been so dominant is that they're rolling goalies.
The crazy part to me is that right before the season started, there was that random goalie carousel for a week where teams were just like swapping third string goalies. Nedeljkovic was on waivers.
Wow.
Nobody claimed him.
That's insane.
So that, you know, just the, if someone had claimed him, because there were so many teams, like the Oilers needed a third string goalie at that time, for example, nobody claimed him. And just how different would the season be if Nedeljkovic had gotten claimed and they were running James Reimer as the starter all season because they didn't have another goalie when Mrazek got injured.
Yeah, that would have been shitty. I didn't think he had to go through waivers. I thought he was exempt.
He did at the beginning of the season. He was on waivers. He might be okay now because he's gone through once.
I thought you had to keep doing it, like, periodic. Maybe it's just because Mrazek has been hurt that they haven't had to do that.
Could have been. Or they just run three goalies on the roster.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know how that works. Like, if they have to put somebody else down then, if you're only allowed to carry, like, so many total.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Kind of weird for all that.
Yeah, weird. But yeah, I mean, how much would Edmonton have loved to have gotten him? Or, you know, a lot of teams would have been sick. So yeah, I mean, he's been good. Aho's been good. And Trocheck has been amazing for them.
He has really blossomed into the depth forward they need to give them another line.
Yeah, he's been just insane for them. And Toivo Teravainen has been hurt for a lot of this season too, and so they're still rolling without one of their top forwards, and so pretty impressive that they're able to do that and hang on, yeah, the first year so far.
Yeah, and moving throughout the division, those top three spots are pretty much set. They're just fighting for seeding at this point, but Nashville and Dallas are fighting for the fourth playoff spot here. Nashville currently holds it with 54 points in 49 games. Dallas is 52 points in 47 games. So Dallas has a slight edge with the two games in hand, only needing to make up the one win. But Nashville also currently has the tiebreaker in regulation wins. So Dallas needs to win three more games than Nashville to give them that regulation win tiebreaker, or they need to just get more points. So that's going to be an interesting one, because Dallas, I mean, coming off their cup final appearance, they struggled big time out of the gate. They were pretty bad early in the season, and then they've slowly started to pick it up, and they've made up a lot of ground. And now they're fighting for that playoff spot, and Nashville also struggled big time early on, but they've also had a surgence lately and have been quite solid the last few weeks. 6-3-1 in their last 10, so they've been decent, but Dallas is 7-1-2, so they could make up a couple of points just if those streaks keep going.
Yeah, one thing to note about Dallas is just how bad they've been in, like, overtime and shootouts. Like, they have 12 overtime and shootout losses. Like, just terrible.
All of those loser points. That's just crazy.
I think they've won twice in overtime because they just won against the Red Wings when they had like 50 shots against Bernier. Yep. And
they won 2-1.
Yeah. And Jamie Benn scored on a goal that was pretty close to being offside. And then I think Jason Dickinson scored once for them in overtime. And other than that, I think they've lost like every other overtime or shootout appearance they've had.
Probably.
And it's like 12 games that they've lost. So they've gotten like the extra point a lot. But like, man, if some of those were wins, like, and they've lost a lot of one goal games. Like, it's just, they're so close to being like good, but they just can't. No clutch, I guess. Like, it's just, I hope that they make playoffs because I like them. But man, those 12 overtime losses, I think, are going to come back and bite them.
Yeah, they couldn't get, you know, even if they had gotten, you know, split them, how many more wins and how many more points does that give them? That puts them in the playoff spot solid over Nashville.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not including the extra point swings that come from any of those close games they lost to Nashville.
Yeah, I think I texted you this, but this might speak to why exactly their record is so bad in overtime, but the last game I watched of them, I think it was against like Chicago or something, and it went to overtime. They started Radek Faksa, Esa Lindell, and Jason Dickinson. So Jason Dickinson got one of the goals for them in OT like very early in the season. But, you know, you're starting like defensive guys, and as soon as they dropped the puck, they won the faceoff draw. They retreated into their defensive zone, and then they got pinned in there for like a minute. And then they put out their good guys when they were able to break out finally. But it was like, why don't you start like Jamie Benn, Miro Heiskanen, you know, Gurianov, Hintz.
Has been amazing.
Like, yeah, it was really, really questionable. Like, I get maybe like those guys had good games and the coach wanted to reward them with like, hey, yeah, go out there, show me what you got. But it's like, Esa Lindell is your starter. Like, you've got Heiskanen, you've got Klingberg. Like, that would be like not my first choice. So it's like, I don't know, just like play to win. Like, don't play to play defensively. I don't know. It was a really weird choice. So if they're doing things like that, it's kind of like, well, yeah, that makes sense that you're not winning in overtime because you're killing time by just throwing out the wrong guys.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, if the intention was just you wanted to get the face off and have like a defensive presence, just throw one of them out and then put Ben and Heiskanen out with a defensive guy to win the faceoff or something, right?
You don't
have to go like all in on that strategy, or have those guys come out and then switch immediately.
Yeah,
get
like
the defender to go into the to go take the puck into their zone, switch the forwards, and break out that way. So you don't have to roll with them for the whole shift.
Yeah, I think Fax is their best faceoff guy, so it's like, yeah, put him out there. But then when you win the draw, just instantly change. Like lots of teams do that. They'll put out, you know, I think Vegas does that with like Nosek. I think they throw Nosek out there a lot to win a faceoff, and then he just boom goes on. Then Pacioretty comes on instead of him. He plays with Stone and Theodore. It's like, yep, that makes sense. So, yeah, weird. Anyway, Dallas is making a push. It's going to be a close race. I think this might be the closest race that that we've got.
Yeah. In this division too, here's a bit of a long shot wild card, but Chicago's not even too far off. You know, they're 5 points back, but you know, they've got one game in hand over Nashville, and Dallas has a game in hand over Chicago. But they're 5 points back, and they've been okay this season. They're a bit worse recently than Nashville and Dallas. But, you know, they've kind of been pushing throughout most of the year. I think they're even sitting in that fourth spot for a little bit. So even they could, you know, make things interesting coming down to the last few games here.
Yeah, if those other teams, like, implode, they could definitely, you know, shoot up there. And so they're definitely in it. I think they're probably closer than people expected them to be. You know, mid-season, yeah, you're right. Like, they were in that playoff spot, and everyone was like, oh, my God, Patrick Kane is willing this team into playoffs. And it's kind of faltered a bit. But, you know, for them to even be, like, close is impressive with just how many guys are out and
the quality of the ones that are in there.
Yeah, also, you know, Andrew Shaw announced his retirement today, you know, calling it a career. So props to him. But, you know, they've got a lot of guys who are out, like him, Taves. Pretty rough.
You know, Kirby Doc missed most of the season. He just came back a few weeks ago, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's definitely some huge injuries for them. And so to even be close is great for them. And Columbus is in the bottom, and they were eliminated before Detroit. So for Detroit, I think that's a huge win that they weren't the first team in the league to be eliminated. I mean, Columbus wasn't either. It was the Sabres. But, you know, Detroit's moving on up. Columbus is not. So great.
Yeah, Detroit's moving up in the standings by going 4-3-3 in their last 10 games. That's a testament to how bad Columbus is and how just completely disjointed that roster and the team is right now.
That's the sound of someone getting benched.
Who will it be this time?
Yeah, find out next time on the Columbus Blue Jackets. All right, well, I guess we'll move on to the Mass Mutual East Division, where teams, I mean, there's some teams trying to make a push here, but I think right now it's really just teams jockeying for seeding at this point.
Pretty much.
So Pittsburgh is in first with 67 points in 49 games. Washington's in second with 66 points, but a game in hand on Pittsburgh. And then the Islanders are sitting in third right now with 63 points, 48 games played. Boston, 60 points in 47. And so I think this is going to stay the same. There is an outside shot at the Rangers making it. They've got 56 points in 49 games. I think it'd be awesome if they could make it. But
that'd be such a fun one because they've got all that just energy, the youthful energy on the team. They've kind of been, the right guys have been clicking and been on fire lately, so it'd be really cool if they could make a late season push and take over the fourth spot from Boston. I don't think they will. I'm with you there. I think it stays how it is now because they have a 4-point deficit to make up and Boston's got two games in hand, so that's a lot of games right there to, you know, to make those points up. But it'd be so fun if they just went on a 10-game hot stretch or a 7-game hot stretch here and somehow found their way in.
Yeah, I mean, they have been playing really hot. Like, they're 7-2-1 in their last 10. And so, you know, Boston's no slouch. They're 6-4-0 in their last 10. But, like, if Boston slides here, I mean, the Rangers could make a push. I think they've got some head-to-heads up coming, too. And so it'd be really interesting to see if they make it, but I think it'd be fun if they could make it because, yeah, you're right. They're so much fun to watch, and you know they got Panarin, they got Zibanejad, and yeah. Fox.
Even Lafreniere has been decent lately. I think he got bumped up to top line duties. He's playing with Zibanejad, and their game on Sunday, Lafreniere was good in that game. Like he got a couple assists. Like, He was a force in that game. Even Kaapo Kakko had a couple of goals, I think, that game as well. So if a lot of these guys start jumping up too, then they're going to make up a lot of goals and find a way to win games that they otherwise wouldn't have.
Yeah, for sure.
And you are right. They do. They end their season on two games against Boston.
Man, if those are like meaningful games, it's going to be so much fun. It's going to be like playoffs.
Yeah.
and
the thing is, too, even if they entered those last two games with the standings the same way they are now, and New York happens to win those two games, then New York would make the playoffs over them, even with a tie, because they've got the regulation win tiebreaker.
That's, man, you gotta love it.
So you know they hold out how they are now and enter those two games with a 2-4 point deficit, and they could realistically pull it out.
That'd be awesome. That'd be crushing for Boston fans, but that would be pretty fun for Rangers fans. Just make it to the last day of the season. I mean, I remember that happening. Like, I can't remember what team it was, but like they made it, they clinched like the last game of the season or something. And it was like,
I think the Rangers were involved in that game.
Could have been.
I'm pretty sure.
But in this division, how awesome would it be if you had like Pens, Caps first round? I mean, they're destined for the second round. But
yeah, that's history, right?
If you had like Caps, Pens first, Islanders, Rangers first,
that would be insane matchups. That would be the headliner of the entire thing.
Yeah, that
is having those rivalries
crazy
and those matchups immediately.
That would be crazy, man. The Metro is so good. I mean, the Mass Mutual East is so good. That would be so insane. First round matchups.
How about the Penguins, though, for them to be in first in the division? That's a surprise to me. I figured they'd be hovering around that 4 or 5 spot, but they've been hot, and the right players have been good.
Cody Ceci?
Cody Ceci has been great. I think he's got like a 5-game point streak or just came off of one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Elite defender
The
Cody Ceci.
elite defenseman pairing of Cody Ceci and Mike Matheson. Yeah. It's funny, I watched like the Penguins game recently and I saw Matheson body slam someone and I was like, he hasn't changed at all. He's the same. But yeah, I mean it is impressive for them. Talking about injuries, like Malkin's been out for, I think he's missed like 21 games or something, and very impressive for them. They're hanging in there and winning. I mean, at a point in the season, it looked like they weren't gonna make it, and so they've really, impressed lately. And Crosby is just doing Crosby things. Like he's really, really good.
This is gonna be a throwback to like, first season that we had episodes, but it's just like you can never count the Penguins out.
Yeah.
Like they're always going to have a shot as long as this team has the core that they have with Crosby on the roster. Like you can't count them out because they're just going to be able to do stuff like this.
I was watching the Pens broadcast and they were talking about how Crosby's so good at taking the pass off of his skate and kicking it up to his stick. And I remember the guy said, I don't remember, I don't know their name. I don't make a habit of watching Pens broadcast, but he was saying like Crosby's just so good. Like he just basically said that. And I was like, yeah.
When you
You've got
can't
a
find the
point.
words, yeah.
You've got a
When you
point
can't
there.
find the words to say it, that works just fine.
Yeah. It's
This
like
simple statement works the best.
yes, true, accurate fact. So yeah, I mean you're yeah, with Crosby, Letang, they've had some good goaltending with Jari and DeSmith. They definitely had their moments, but they've been kind of solid lately. Yeah, getting some depth scoring. They've got like, Rust and
Yeah,
Gensel.
the secondary guys, Russ Gensel and Jared McCann, since he's been back from injury, have been producing like exceptionally well.
Yeah, so I mean, I hope that the Caps, they're only a point back and have a game in hand, so I really hope the Caps supersede them, but they've been playing good hockey, really good. And how disappointing is it for Philly? I mean, they were what, like second in the East or the Metro last year and looked like they were kind of unstoppable, and now they're definitely not going to make playoffs.
Yeah, this has just been a horrible season for that team, and there's not a whole lot to say. I mean, their defense, their goaltending has let them down immensely, but you also have to factor in that their offense has been pretty bad too, that they've only scored 136 goals, and that puts them, where Boston is, but they also have given up 50 more goals than Boston. But 136 goals just hasn't been enough to give them any sort of coverage for that lack of goaltending. And they just haven't been able to find a solution for it. And it's just the regular occurrence in Philly is questions in goal.
Yeah, it's rough. I mean, you look at a lot of the other teams that we talked about. I mean, with the exception of Arizona and Nashville, they've all got a positive goal differential. The ones that are, reasonable to make playoffs. And Philly's at minus 35. And there's some exceptions like Nashville and Arizona, but more often than not, that's a really good quick litmus test to see if you're a good team. And right now, Philly isn't.
Yeah, generally speaking, that goal differential is for maybe 14 or 15 out of the teams in the playoffs. If you have a positive goal differential, you are in the playoffs. Like that's a pretty general indicator of overall success is just goal differential. And like you said, Philly minus 35. They've given up the same amount of goals as the Sabres this season. Like that's telling.
Yeah, and like one more than Ottawa. So yeah, you're right. It's pretty bad that they've let in that many goals and that their defense is that bad, and like what a fall from grace. They were my pick for the cup favorite. I picked them to win the cup and it's 100% not happening. Should have went with the easy, Colorado, but or Vegas or something, but yeah. not a particularly positive season for them. And so, you know, has Vino outstayed his welcome? Do they need to shake things up? I don't know. But, you know, they're definitely on the downswing and the Rangers are on the upswing. And so, you know, they kind of lost some ground for sure. And then, you know, last but definitely not least, as Canadians here, we'll talk about the Scotiabank North Division, Canadian Division. And so
that's the preferred title for it.
Yeah, the O Canada Division.
there we go.
So in first, you've got Toronto. They have got 65 points in 48 games. Second is Winnipeg currently, 57 points in 47 games. Edmonton, 45 games played, 56 points. So they're 1 point back from Winnipeg, but they have 2 games in hand. Those two are playing head-to-head tonight.
Yeah, right now.
And then Montreal is currently sitting in that final playoff spot with 49 points in 46 games played.
51 and 47.
Did they just win tonight?
Oh, they must have.
Oh, man. I guess I haven't refreshed recently enough.
NHL.com/standings. Yeah, they must have won tonight. The 51 and 47.
I was on I'm on NHL.com standings. So they must have won. Yeah, against.
So they've won since we opened the tab.
Yeah. So 51 points in 47 games played.
So that, and you know, that head to head matchup there for the Habs, winning that gives them a 6 point cushion instead of the 2 points they would have had if Montreal or if Calgary won. So that's got huge implications to give them 6 point cushion with a game in hand, because that's really the only team that's got a shot here. Vancouver was making a slight push, but they're way too far back to get there, even though they do have a lot of games in hand.
Yes.
they could take over Calgary and finish fifth, but you know, that this division's kind of playing out as we thought it would at the beginning of the season. Like Toronto first, I mean, Winnipeg in second is a surprise with their defense, but they kind of have the ability to just overperform. And also being backed by Connor Hellebuyck most of the time. But, you know, that first round matchup between Edmonton and Winnipeg seems to be pretty much set, as there's like 5+ points on either side of them as a cushion. So they're basically just fighting for seeding. And then Montreal seems to have a solid spot on that last playoff spot, but they've also been struggling a bit lately. And, you know, Calgary's also not great this season, but Montreal, you know, going into the last stretch here with the lead, Montreal kind of has the advantage for sure.
Yeah, I unless Vancouver does something crazy here, I don't see them climbing up the ladder. Although it'd be fun to watch them try, because they do have, you know, a few games in hand, but you know, they're 10 points back in only 6 games, so I doubt they're going to go, you know, undefeated here at the end of the season. The COVID boys, you know, are only human after all. So, yeah, I think it's really going to be that, you know, kind of that Prairie matchup, not the Battle of Alberta, but Prairies, and then Toronto-Montreal, which will be super awesome.
That's been a long time since that series happened, since that matchup in the playoffs, hasn't it?
I imagine so. I don't think I've ever...
I don't recall one.
I don't recall it happening in my life, but maybe it happened when I was like 4 or something. I don't know. It'll be fun to watch, though, if it does happen. I think the Habs hang on. And yeah, we'll see if Price can go God mode again in playoffs, as he is prone to do.
Well, he sort of did it last season to get them through the Penguins in the play-in rounds, but he's sort of been struggling. He's also dealing with injuries this season. He's out with a concussion right now, so it might not be at 100%, but hopefully he's okay, and hopefully he can keep that series close when it happens.
Yeah, it'll be fun to watch, though. I'm really looking forward. I mean, there's a lot of good matchups. I mean, there's some awesome ones that are going to happen in each division. You know, I think the West is kind of, it might have that Colorado-Minnesota matchup might be exciting. If Colorado stays in second, I know that they've had some playoff rounds against each other before, and so that might be fun to watch.
Could be the
But
Battle of Devin Dubnyk.
yes, yeah. But that Florida Tampa one, if they play each other, that's going to be outstanding. Caps Pens obviously is huge. If the Rangers make it in, them versus the Islanders would be awesome, and then that Toronto Montreal one's going to be cool. But yeah, I mean, I think we're pretty set here, going into playoffs, unless there's some remarkable pushes made by some teams. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited for it. It seems crazy that it's coming up so fast. But I guess we'll kind of, unless you have anything else on that, we'll switch gears and talk about kind of some of these trophy races. Wanted to start with Calder, Rookie of the Year.
Sure. Yeah, I mean a couple of them are there's some interesting discussions, interesting players, in contention for these awards, some names that you might not expect and just some storylines around it. So, yeah, let's talk about the Calder because I think this one's a little bit more clear cut, but there is an interesting, caveat to the favorite, I think. Talk about the Calder Trophy. So, we've got Kirill Kaprizov, who is, the leading rookie scorer in this season. Like we talked about him earlier, he's such a strong, exciting, dynamic player, and he's probably the clear-cut favorite for the Calder Trophy. But he's another case of someone who's played pro in Russia already. So there's a lot of debate over whether or not he should be even eligible for it because he's older than most of the other rookies, and he's got, experience over in Russia coming over to the NHL. I don't see an issue with it, to be honest, because he hasn't played in the NHL. But there's obviously going to be that discussion being had a lot between now and when that trophy is handed out.
Yeah, it's not like it's what, Sergei Makarov, who's like 30.
Yeah, 30 or 31.
I mean, yeah, Panarin can come in. Panarin was what, like 25 or something when he played. I
Around there,
think
yeah.
Kaprizov is like 23 or something. So I don't have a problem with it. He's really my pick. He puts up the points and just how plays a two-way game. He puts hustle in and how he just fundamentally changed that team. Like, yeah, he's their MVP. I think he's definitely the favorite for Calder, and he's my pick. But yeah, there's
See,
definitely some other interesting guys out there.
one last thing to that eligibility thing is the way the Calder Trophy is awarded is that it's to the player selected as the most proficient in his first year of competition in the National Hockey League. It's not, there's no criteria of professional hockey. It's just the NHL. He's new to the NHL, so why is that's not really an issue that he's getting it or that
Yeah,
he's available or he's eligible for it.
it'd be the same as if like a guy played in the AHL for like a full season and the next
Yeah.
year came up into the NHL. It's like they're still a rookie.
They're still a rookie. They've got pro experience from the AHL, but they're still a rookie.
Yeah. So
Yeah, anyways, one of the other interesting names that's kind of come out of nowhere is Jason Robertson for the Dallas Stars, who is
yeah.
actually pretty much tied with Kaprizov in points per game. But he's played a few less games. He didn't break into the lineup immediately this season. But he's also shot up the rookie scoring board, and he's sitting at he's like 40 or 41 points in his 40 games or something like that. So he's also going to be in the mix because he's just been a strong offensive player for Dallas, something that they haven't had a lot of. They've struggled with. So he'll probably be getting a lot of contention there as well.
Yeah, he's been really just kind of a breath of fresh air for that team. He's definitely kind of the good story for the Stars this season. Kind of balances out, the Dennis Gurianov really kind of petering off a bit this season. He had like a career high goals last season, as everyone thought he was going to be on the uptake, and now Robertson has kind of really replaced him on that, first line, I guess, on the first power play. Like there's the guys on the team are just like, just give, they call him Robo, just give Robo the puck and it's going in, right? And so
Yeah,
just really fun to watch.
I'm mad at myself now because I've been watching him in fantasy pick up like the waiver wire just for a couple of weeks, just seeing if he'd keep up, because he started pretty strong. He got like a handful of assists in his first few games, and I was like, oh, I should keep an eye on him and pick him up, and then I just never did, and turns out I should have.
Yeah.
He's been really good.
Yeah. And you know, my favorite thing about him is just the fact that Sportsnet has not blown up about him like they did with his brother, because his brother plays on the Leafs.
Oh God, yeah, that's telling. It's like, last playoffs it was when Nick Robertson started to make his debut, when Sportsnet was just like glamoring over him. They were like,
It's like the
they were
second
basically building
coming.
a shrine. Yeah, they were building the kid a shrine, and he hadn't even made his debut yet. And his brother, who's had more success at the NHL level than him, having this amazing season, gets absolutely no coverage.
So, he's definitely a really interesting pick too for the Nor or not Norris, but the Calder. Definitely impressing, a lot of people. I think after those two, for me personally, it kind of drops off a bit.
It does. However, for me, the race is still interesting. I wanted to hear your thoughts on this too, because it's three very similar goalies in Vitek Vanacek, Kevin Lankinen, and Igor Shesterkin, that they won't win the award, but the three of them, to see kind of who gets the most votes and kind of who gets that third spot, because they've all been really good in their own way. I mean, Vanacek's got the amazing record. He kind of held the fort for Washington when Samsonov was out. He's like 17-9-3 or something. Lankinen was a huge part of why Chicago was competitive in the first half of the season, that he was just so good. He's trailed off a bit lately, but his numbers are still solid given what he's been working with. And Shesterkin's played a little bit less, but he's also got a pretty incredible stat line. He's got like a 919 save percentage, 247 goals against average, 9.18 goals saved above average, compared to Lankinen's 3.3 and Vanacek's like negative 0.5. So Shesterkin's kind of, the numbers game is in his favor on that one. But I was kind of wondering where you would fall, who would get your highest vote among those three goalies.
Well, and isn't Nedeljkovic technically a rookie too?
Oh yeah, I didn't even write him
So,
down, but yeah, Nedeljkovic should be in there as well.
and Sorokin's in there too. I mean, he hasn't played as much either, but yeah, I think Shesterkin out of those guys has been probably the most impressive. I mean, the Rangers are a high-flying team that score a lot, and they give up a lot of shots as well. And he's posted like back-to-back shutouts, and he's playing a lot, and he's been very impressive. I mean, Vanacek definitely held the fort down when Samsonov was hurt, or not hurt, but on the COVID list for the Capitals, and he played some pretty good hockey. And I watch a lot of Caps games, and lately he hasn't been as good. And Samsonov is definitely kind of taking the crease back. But yeah, I mean, all of them have been really outstanding at parts of the season, but I think Shesterkin, just for what he is for the Rangers, like, he is the guy. And I think, Kapokkanen and Sorokin and Vanacek, and to a lesser extent Nedeljkovic, are all kind of like, they're getting a bit of sheltered starts. Maybe, yeah, less than Nedeljkovic. And then the other guy who would be up there with Shesterkin for me is definitely Lankinen, just because he played a lot. But again, Subban has kind of been taking the crease back a bit, so.
Yeah. To add one more name to the list too is Jake Ottinger in Dallas.
Yeah, so there's so
You
many
know,
good
that like this
young
isn't never ending.
goalies.
It's crazy for this many amazing rookie goalies in the same season. Kekkonen, Nedeljkovic, Sorokin, and Ottinger have played a fair amount less than Vanacek, Lankinen, and Shesterkin. So they won't really be in contention for the award, but their numbers are all comparable, if not better than any of the top three in the category.
Yeah, it's a pretty good class for rookies for sure. I mean, the goalies are just outstanding. I can't remember the last time there was that many like great young goalies, and maybe it's just because they're getting more of an opportunity this season because of the condensed schedule, and they're having to rely on those guys. But for skaters, it's like, yeah, for me, it's like Kaprizov and then Robertson and then you know, a bit of a drop off to like Stützle, Norris, Ty Smith, who I think as a defenseman, it's a lot harder to kind of get on that list. And especially when you're on like a not playoff team. But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be Kaprizov or Robertson, you know, depending on if Robertson can do something crazy here when the Dallas tries to make playoffs, like if he's getting like, you know, 2 goals a game or something like that, I think he might become the favorite. But for me right now, it's really just Kaprizov. And I've been watching both, and I just, Kaprizov is just a whole other level for me.
He's flashier. He stands out more. It's kind of like that the player to watch. Robertson's good, but Kaprizov has that X factor that makes him stand out when he has the puck, when he plays.
Yeah, and maybe this is because I just bought a Haskinen jersey. And so I don't need another Stars jersey, but Kaprizov is like seriously making me consider buying a jersey for him, just because like I love that guy. he's just so crazy, and like I don't know, I don't particularly like the Wild that much, but that player is just so good, and I love watching him.
You're gonna need a jersey room here right away.
I know, I'm doing my best to imitate the jersey guy or the hockey guy. I've only got like two with numbers and name bars on them, and one of them's from when I was in like, one of them's from like 2009 or 8 or something, my Ovechkin jersey. I still have lots of rooms on my walls to hang them up. So
okay, well you're gonna have to work on filling those up with players you like watching here.
Yeah,
you're,
I mean,
you're gonna need to see this hockey room, yeah, hockey shrine.
I'm into it. Get on board.
Yeah, the other award that's kind of a bit interesting this year, just with the amount of new names hanging around, is the Norris Trophy. To me, the favorite is going to be Victor Hedman. He's probably going to win it this year. But a lot of, with the Norris Trophy, the way to win it is by being good for many years. You have to build up like a name recognition, reputation before you really get consideration for it. A lot of the players who have been doing that over the last 10 years have trailed off. They're not really in contention anymore. So there's a lot of turnover in those names. You know, last year we saw Roman Josi kind of come out of nowhere after an amazing second half and win it. John Carlson's been in that conversation over the last few years. But none of them have made a clear-cut case to be the contenders this year. But there's a handful of new names who are making cases for that. One of the main ones is Adam Fox, who has been incredible for the Rangers' back end. He's leading the leading defenders in scoring. Point per game, like 48 points in 47 games or something for them, and he's leading them in time on ice. He's just an amazing impact for them. You've also got guys like Darnell Nurse, who is incredible for the Oilers in the first half of the season. So much time on ice, like I think he's leading the league in like defender even strength goals or some stat like that. Cale Makar has been great. He's going to be in this conversation for years to come, but he's already getting there and. You know, what is sophomore season. And to a lesser extent, guys like Shea Theodore, who have really cemented his place on Vegas's blue line. And Charlie McAvoy has done pretty well with Boston in taking over the defensive corps from, you know, Zdeno Chara and Tori Krug.
Yeah, but really left a lot of guys for me to mention. But yeah, I think, I think Fox has been probably the most impressive scoring-wise. And he's also a plus 23 casually. On the Rangers and, you know, playing an average of 24 and a half minutes a night. You know, he's the guy there. It's not like Trouba or I don't know who even else is there, but, he's the guy. And I think like, you know, last year in fantasy, it was aggravating because him and D'Angelo would kind of like split power plays and, you never really knew who to go with. And this season, it's like, D'Angelo who? Like, we don't need that guy. We've got Fox.
Yeah. He who shall not be named is basically where D'Angelo's at right now.
Yeah, like, Fox has really blossomed with the opportunity and shown that he's the guy and always has been, you know, in that debate. And I don't know if he's going to get it. You know, especially the precedent was kind of... It's never really been like the guy with the most points. Like Carlson didn't get it last season. It is kind of that, you got to build your name up. And so if he gets it, I'll be happy for him, but part of me will be kind of upset that Carlson didn't get it last year. If he hangs on to the point lead, that is. But yeah, I mean, I think you got to go Hedman again. He's got like how many overtime winners this season? He's like.
He's got another one yet, like yesterday or over the weekend. But I mean, he's fifth in time on ice per game in the league, I think. Like second in points for defenders. So he's not even that far off of Fox offensively. He's only a couple of points back there. But he's just such a huge part of Tampa Bay's performance and their defense. And he's got all the name recognition, the reputation that it's his to lose. I mean, in his part two, Yossi is going to be in that conversation as well. Because he has been solid, especially in the late season when Nashville resurged a bit, and because he's got the reputation built up from the previous year. But yeah, it's Hedman's to lose, but it's going to be fun to see all these different names making a case for the Norris Trophy late this season.
Yeah, I mean, a guy that we didn't mention, but Jeff Petrie, was kind of on
Oh, I
track
forgot about him.
to be there, but I think he's kind of toned it down a bit, at least points wise, the second half of the season here. But there's lots of defensemen that are having really good years. Jacob Chychrun for Arizona is leading defenseman in goal scoring. Nurse, you mentioned him, is second. Petrie's third. I think Nurse, has got a real shot at it actually because of just what he brings to the Oilers. And then a guy who was on a Norris, season
Trajectory.
trajectory, yeah, was Aaron Ekblad. And it's really sad that he got injured and is out the rest of the year because he was just, bringing a lot to that team.
Yeah, he would have been right up there with Hedman. He'll still get some votes just because, he was so good for most of the season. But yeah, he was right on pace to match Hedman. He was probably the favorite at that point in the season.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that that he got is gonna miss the rest of the season here. But yeah, I mean, it's a really I think this one's always kind of a weirdo award where it's like, yeah, whose turn is it this year? Heaven was good last year and the year before that, and he's good this year, so the track record checks out. Let's give it to him.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily like
That's
who's
exactly
the
it.
most dominant offensively, who's the most offensive or defensive. It's like I've seen this thrown around a bit where it's like people propose like splitting it into two trophies where it's like you've got the offensive defenseman award and you've got the defensive defenseman award because it's like those are two different skill sets and the Norris is usually the offensive guy.
Yeah, that's the one. It's hard to quantify or qualify defensive play. So the best defenders don't normally get much recognition or, insight into their game. You don't notice them a whole lot. So it's the ones that take, average to good defensive play, not to diminish like Hedman or anything. He's amazing. But they have to have that offensive flair to it. And you see like guys like Erik Karlsson will and Brent Burns will take Norris contention just from being amazing offensively.
Yeah, I like it if like the defensive one was like voted on by the players, so it's like, like what defenseman in the league are you like most worried about like going one on one with or
Yeah.
something? Like who's gonna like shut you down or something like that? So it's like, like
A little bit more way to actually, value the defensive play. From the people who are actually against them, instead of just trying to watch and figure out who's doing the right thing or not.
yeah, like a guy like Alec Martinez or I don't know, like
Well, in his
Suter
prime,
or
like Marc-Edouard Vlasic, amazing
yeah.
defender. I think Jacob Slavin is kind of in that category right now.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, it's like what player would you least likely go on a one-on-one with or something like that? Like who do you think you have the lowest shot of getting by or something like that, and leave it up to the players so that the all this the writers and stuff, because they'll just pick the flashiest guy or whatever.
Yeah, and if you go for the offense and split it up, and you get the offensive defender award, it's just gonna go to the guy with the most points.
Yeah, and then it's easier to pick.
Yeah.
And then you're not pretending that it's a defensive word. It's just a who have you plays on defense but puts up the most points. It's not the overall defense points or anything like that. Overall defensive prowess. It's just who plays power play and gets it done. You know, Carlson, you feed the puck to Ovechkin, you got a good chance at it. Yada yada yada.
I
Whatever.
realize as we've had this discussion that it's difficult when we're referring to Carlson if we're talking about John or Eric.
True. Yep. Every time I've referenced him has been John.
I've been mixing it up. I
Yes.
just never really even thought about it.
Yeah. Carlson with a C for sure.
That wraps things up for this time here on ClapperCast. Make sure you rate and review this episode and toss a follow or subscribe our way. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at ClapperCast Media or on Twitter at ClapperCast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more hockey talk.